Suzanne Crouch and Mike Braun officially launch their bids for governor, a new state budget forecast, plus Holcomb's pause on politics, and more. From the television studios at WFYI, it's Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 16th, 2022.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
This week, U.S. Senator Mike Braun says he's running for governor to make Indiana a leader for freedom, opportunity, and prosperity. Meanwhile, Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch announced her own gubernatorial bid and says if Republicans want to hold on to the governor's office, they'll need a different kind of candidate. Braun's campaign launch was at a high-end steakhouse in downtown Indianapolis. Speaking to a group of major GOP donors and supporters, Braun says he'll engage all of you to help him understand what the issues are.
When you look at the issues that I think are important to most Americans, most Hoosiers, I'm going to weigh in on them. And I'm going to do it in a way that is entrepreneurial and going to maybe push the envelope a little bit.
Braun specifically cited high health care prices, the state's poor infant and maternal mortality rates, education, and salary raises for the state police. If Suzanne Crouch's name appears on the ballot in May 2024, she'll have already made history, the first woman to run for Indiana governor in a Republican primary. And if she wins the gubernatorial race, she'd be the Hoosier State's first woman governor. But Crouch says gender isn't an issue in her campaign.
For me, I don't see myself as, you know, I'm a female candidate or I'm a female office holder. I am a woman. I'm proud of that. But I see myself more as someone who is trying to get things done for Hoosiers.
Crouch says her vision for the state is improving quality of life. She says doing so builds on the existing economic foundation by emphasizing measures that Crouch says haven't been focused on, including mental health, addiction, and public health. Do Republicans need a different kind of candidate? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat, Ann Delaney. Republican, Mike O'Brien. John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers. And Whitney Downard, senior reporter for the Indiana Capital Chronicle. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House Bureau Chief Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, Crouch says her gender, she doesn't see her gender as an issue in the campaign. Is she right?
No, of course she's not right. I mean, Republicans have never elected a woman governor. They haven't.
No, they're Democrats.
Well, yeah, there's a little difference here. They have women lieutenant governors, and they put that glass ceiling right out there, and they never let them go any higher. It's going to be an issue as to whether Republicans can nominate a woman, and then we'll see what happens. But the other issue is she's right about a different kind of candidate. You know, since Mitch Daniels left, we've had a merry-go-round of mediocre candidates switching jobs left and right, and none of them have any ideas. None of them have any programs. I mean, freedom, prosperity, and opportunity, they've been in charge for 20-something years. Are we not free? I guess we're not, because we don't think you should be free to marry whoever you like, and you don't think that women should be free to make decisions on their own bodies. And in terms of opportunity, and you don't even think voters should be free to choose who the president is, if you're Mike Braun. So you know, you get all of that, and that's the kind of sloganeering. I mean, he bought himself a Senate seat, and now he wants to buy himself the governor's seat. And, you know, that might be excusable if he had something he wanted to accomplish, something he wanted to do. But they're completely devoid of any meaningful ideas to move the state forward. And they just keep revolving around in different offices. They go from the House to the Senate, and the Senate to the governor, and the governor, you know, on and on with the same group of mediocre candidates.
I want to turn to Suzanne Crouch for a second. She said, you know, I don't see myself as a female office holder or a female candidate. Are voters going is that going to be an issue for voters, either positively or negatively?
Of course, yeah, and it should be, and it's because the Indiana Republican Party for a long time has made, for decades now, has made training and recruiting women for offices, all offices,
a
priority.
Except governor
and senator. And here we are. So we've had members of Congress, we've had so many members of the General Assembly, all of our statewide elected offices, all the administrative offices, and now we get to, that kind of this point, turning point, really, where you've had, you now have a lieutenant governor. Our previous lieutenant governors decided not to. You know, it wasn't that we were denying them the opportunity. It's that Becky Skillman and Sue Elsterman and others decided
they
didn't want
to
do it.
They wanted to decide.
They weren't. I was there. They decided not to. But we've had this very intentional effort, which we've now duplicated, the Lure series for 30 years that recruits and trains women for elected office. And now we've replicated that for minorities to start to begin investing in diversity in the Republican Party, knowing that needs to be a priority. And now we're to this point where now we do have a major party candidate for governor who's a woman. Victoria Spartz is now talking about being a major party candidate for the U.S. Senate. So that is happening. That evolution is great. It's intentional, and it's really encouraging. And it should be an issue that we talk about.
Yeah, I was going to say, after the May primary of 2024, it's possible both Republican nominees for Senate and governor could be women. Talking about Mike Braun, I was at this event. The optics of it seemed a little strange. High-end steakhouse with a bunch of high-dollar donors and supporters. No questions from the press. A few remarks that I can't tell you why he's running for governor, quite frankly. As a kickoff to a campaign, did this leave a lot to the imagination?
It's a bit atypical compared with what we see more often from Republican aspirants for office these days. It might be, you know, sitting on hay bales during the harvest period. It might be at Sunday school or church, you know, greeting fellow parishioners before or after at the potluck. At a factory, all of these sorts of, and those are cliches, but they're cliches because they're pretty common. And there's people do build a lot of messaging into their announcements. Now, I think what's at work here is that took a backseat to speed, expediency. I mean, there's a desire to.
Well, but that's the thing that doesn't, if you were starting a campaign really late, I get like putting yourselves in front of the people who are going to give you the money right away.
2 years away.
Exactly. We're way ahead of the normal schedule.
Yeah, but if you're in that top tier, every day you don't jump, you feel like you're wasting time. It feels like it's
just
gaining
on you. But if you're going to put your own money in the campaign.
But especially since you already have a candidate who's been at it for.
He said he doesn't want to do that this time.
Yeah, he'll do that.
You have a candidate who's been in it for more than a year. So, I mean, that's atypical too. So maybe.
But he's known that for
years. I want to ask this part about Mike Braun's.
Stop stepping on Whitney here.
I want to ask this part about Mike Braun's announcement, which is. The Senate campaign that he ran successfully in 2018, both in the primary and in the general election, he ran himself as like a different kind of candidate. But I'm the Main Street businessman. The blue shirt became like a signature, like, you know, no tie, no jacket, just the blue shirt. Aw shucks, Main Street everyman. This doesn't fit with that image, does it?
That's not the Mike Braun that we saw on Monday. This was this event just 100% was for the donors. It wasn't announcing to us, you know, you would have thought about camera angles or where, you know, we were. You would have given some media access if you actually wanted it to be for the greater public. And it was just for the 70 or so donors that he said were there. And it's a complete turnaround from what I've heard about his 2018 Senate run. And it just, the lack of access was also very frustrating because we didn't know until we got there.
Yeah. All right, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question. And this week's question is, who should be the Republican nominee for governor in 2024? Mike Braun, Suzanne Crouch, Eric Doden, or someone else? Last week's question, is Attorney General Todd Rokita right to go after TikTok for its alleged access to user data and inappropriate videos for children? 56% of you say yes, 44% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. A new state revenue forecast projects that Indiana lawmakers will have about $1.6 billion in new money to spend in the 2023 session. Yet Republican fiscal leaders are already preparing to say no to a lot of budget requests. The forecast says for the new state budget, the state is projected to increase revenue by a two-year total of $1.2 billion, even with a mild recession predicted next year. Senate GOP budget architect Ryan Mishler says that seems like a lot, but he notes that Indiana state agencies have already asked for a total of $700 million a year in new spending.
And we haven't even discussed member requests, K-12 tuition support, or higher ed. So I think we need to be very cautious as we move forward. We'll work with what we have.
Democrats say state finances should weather any economic downturn, and they argue that long-term economic growth requires significant investments now in public health and education. Mike O'Brien, is caution the right approach here?
It always is. I mean, but the last couple of years, we've had this like bonanza of tax revenue from all the stimulus money, putting money in people's pockets, and then the tax revenue that kind of flowed from that, and then
more federal stimulus just directly to the state.
So you've had this kind of pile of money.
And then inflation.
And then inflation comes and wipes a lot of it out. And, you know, all the capital projects they put online the last couple of years, the completion of I-69, the North Split in central Indiana, the new prison in Westville. I mean, these are like, you know, all in are billions of dollars of projects that are now far more expensive than they were 2 years ago.
So Swine Barn, don't forget.
The Swine Barn, which is lovely. It looks beautiful, Anne. You should drive by.
Have you been visiting?
Well, I go to field games. I go to the hockey games. It's sitting right there.
So you see there.
Okay. So I think they're always like, there's no money, right? But that's fine. But this time, I mean, it's not theoretical that all these agencies are coming in and asking for far more money than they did 2 years ago, that the projects that are ongoing even, and the ones that they approved at universities and other places, are in fact far more expensive, and supply chain's an issue. And this is just something that state government inside of the current budget has been grappling with for the last 18 months.
We heard the economic forecast from a national advisor right before the revenue forecast, and he said, listen, there's a recession coming.
It's been coming for 18 months.
It really does feel like it's coming this time. And,
oh, yeah?
But it's not supposed to be that bad. Yeah. You know, you'll see
I
it
don't
in
think
the,
you'll even notice it,
well,
as a matter of fact.
But given that, even if there is a slight downturn, maybe not a full recession, isn't a little bit of caution warranted?
You always have a little bit of caution. I'm not saying you spend every single cent, but there are some economic policies you ought to be following, like bonding that we've talked about before for these capital projects. We have needs in this state. We're underpaying our teachers. Our health care, the health of the population is awful. We're not investing in that. We're not investing.
Too.
They're complaining about their, we'll see if it actually gets passed. Then on top of that, we've got higher education that's being priced out of the market for a lot of people, and people are complaining about student loans. They could deal with that. They could do something about those real problems. And instead, they don't have any ideas. Their only idea is, let's hold it and let's cut taxes. That's the only thing they can think to do. And this state needs a more progressive, more forward-thinking approach to those problems than the Republicans are currently providing.
Does this budget, we'll get an updated forecast in April that'll really be the tail of the tape, but does this budget feel like it's going to be, a lot of people get something, but nobody's getting everything that they want?
I think so, because I think one of the big problems that the COVID-19 pandemic revealed is that a lot of our structures aren't working. For example, nursing homes and at-home health care. We need more at-home health care. And, you know, education, a lot of students have fallen behind when it comes to their reading scores. So there's all these gaps that were exposed during the COVID-19 pandemic that now we need to patch and repair. So they're going to have to spend money to address some of these problems that became exacerbated in the pandemic.
And, you know, $1.2 billion in new ongoing revenue in the new budget. The other $367 million is expected to come in this budget year. But $600 million a year in a two-year state budget, that gets eaten up pretty quickly, doesn't it?
Strangely enough, yeah. It's hard to...
Doesn't
you know,
feel...
Every
I mean, $600 million.
A million here, a million there, and pretty soon real money. No, that's... you're right. It in the scheme of things... I hate to say it's a minimal amount, but it does go fast.
And this is
still
good news, too, given that, you know, there are these predictions about a recession
or
a downturn.
Which has been going on for 18
months.
They
have.
It is good news. And on the surface, it is welcome news for those who are seeking funding, because there will be enough, perhaps, to, as you suggest, sort of spread it out a little bit. The tricky part is, for budget architects, it makes their life a little more complicated, because the line of people and entities, agencies, organizations showing up, lining up outside their offices, literally or figuratively, saying, here's our needs. We have a great need, and here, this is it. You know, when you're broke and you're looking, no one bothers showing up. So it's in a strange way, it complicates things. And I wouldn't say that you mentioned that it'll be something for everybody, but still nothing, no big ticket items. That's not your words, but something to that effect. I do think the governor has set the stage, and actually circumstances have set the stage for mental health and certain types of, I won't say long overlooked, but still.
Oh, no, they're definitely long overlooked.
Chronically underfunded, let's
yes.
put
long
it that
overlooked.
Way.
Both of those things.
Will be a big ticket. They have to be, the stage is set. Yeah. Task forces have been working. So I think that stands to come out with a lot of zeros behind it.
All right. Well, Governor Eric Holcomb isn't making any endorsements in the 2024 governor's race for now. Holcomb says he's holding off on any explicitly political activity until after the upcoming legislative session.
This is, you know, my last budget, and the priorities in it are very important, and they're going to have a long-lasting effect and impact on whoever my successor ends up being. And I want to make sure we stick the landing.
Holcomb is term limited from running for governor, but Indiana will now have an open U.S. Senate seat. Major Republican figures, including U.S. Representatives Jim Banks and Victoria Spartz, have already indicated they'll announce their intentions after the holidays. There's speculation Holcomb could join that race, but he says his pledge to focus on the legislative session includes avoiding any potential announcements about his own future.
I'm going to do the job I got at the expense of no other decision.
Holcomb says he's comfortable with that choice and even finds it liberating. John Schwannis, is this the right play from Eric Holcomb?
In a sense, it's the predictable, traditional approach when a leader in either party who has held office and is passing the torch, there's conventional wisdom would say a reluctance to anoint anyone because you make one person happy and that person's supporters, but then you anger and frustrate a whole lot more. And especially in a field shaping up like this where you have numerous candidates, and again, mere mathematics is you're going to honk off more people than you please, which you don't want to do going into a critically important budget session of the General Assembly. You want to make sure that you go in at least with as good a relationship with various factions of the party and the caucus as one can have. Again, without the complicating factor of, well, you want me to do this on your bill, but you wouldn't support my candidate or me. Yeah. So avoid it.
In a general election in this state, an Eric Holcomb endorsement, I think, would be very helpful. In a Republican primary, is it going to help that candidate?
I think that the last Republican primary and convention shows us that not necessarily. Holly Sullivan looked like a shoo-in for Secretary of State before the convention and didn't make it through and lost to a more conservative Diego Morales. So I don't think that it's necessarily a blessing for a candidate to get the endorsement right now, and that it might be wise to avoid.
In terms of Holcomb's own future, I don't know if he's going to run for the U.S. Senate or not, but if he does, there are probably going to be one, maybe two serious candidates and people like Jim Banks and Victoria Spartz who will announce way before the end of the Indiana legislative session. Is it going to hurt him to wait to announce on his potential future until May or later?
Oh, I don't think so. I think he's got a lot more name recognition than either of those two election deniers that are out there. It's true
that
Jim Banks and the bulk of the Republican congressional candidates in this state are an embarrassment to the state. I mean, they denied the election. They dismissed the assault on the Capitol. All of those things are there. That may help him in the Republican primary. It would damn him in a general election against a solid candidate. So I don't know. I think you're right about the convention, but the convention is a microcosm too. It isn't the whole electorate. And if you have the resources to get to the whole electorate to sell your message, that an endorsement from a governor who's not unpopular, because, of course, he hasn't done anything, so he's really not angered anybody.
You talk about stuff you hate that he's done all the time.
No, he hasn't done very much. I mean, I'm waiting to see. He's not on the order of either Rokita or Diego Morales, so, he's not bad.
I want to ask you the same question I asked Whitney, which is, does an Eric Holcomb endorsement in the Republican primary help or hurt a candidate?
There's a couple elements to that. Some are, the base, which was revealed at the convention, is dissatisfied with certain things that he did, mostly directly tied to COVID.
Yes.
And the COVID reaction. So there are substantive, decisions that he's made as governor that the base didn't like, and they reacted that way. But there's also this sense of, when I was a county chair, we'd have caucuses, and precinct committeemen or convention delegates, primary election voters have very few opportunities. They don't want to be told. There is this element of no, let me listen and figure this out. Let me decide on my own. I don't need the other
this
guy. And we've seen that a lot. I mean, we saw it with, you know, Victoria Sparks as a congresswoman because the party caucus bucked the outgoing senator's nominee. So there's a lot of examples of this that sometimes have a direct tie-in to something you've done and they don't like it. But generally, there's a sense of don't take my choice away from me, or don't try to, because I'm going to react the opposite way you think I'm going to.
Yeah, but
and that's an element in both parties.
Endorsing her is not taking their choice away, and what he can say is
no, but it does look like the heavy hand of Indianapolis is coming into all parts of the state to try to make a choice.
I have had a loyal lieutenant governor who's female. We could make history in Indiana by nominating a female for the office of governor in the state of Indiana on the Republican Party. And
well,
you know,
don't
you've got to wonder
strategically. Don't you do that if the three of them are running and it's well funded and she's right in there and you're trying to put your finger on the scale? You do that at the right time, don't you? Don't do it 18 months out and then it's just then who cares? It's a waste. No one's thinking about it.
Right.
Except
it's going to be lost by the time people are asking.
So you think he's going to put his finger on the scale 18 months from now?
I don't know what he's going to do. If he wants to break the glass ceiling,
if he wants
Suzanne Crouch to be the nominee and he thinks it's going to be helpful, then that's the analysis, right?
Well, as Mike Braun and Suzanne Crouch launch their campaigns for governor, Republican Eric Doden, who announced last year, is already releasing policy proposals. His latest takes aim at Indiana's teacher shortage.
Doden's policy proposal, which comes with a digital ad touting it, is meant to help reduce the more than 2,000 teacher shortage in Indiana's public schools.
Under our plan, teachers will pay no state income tax. We'll receive a tax credit to offset property taxes, and we'll work with our state universities to lower the cost of becoming a teacher.
Educators would have to have at least 5 years of service in teaching to get the property tax credit, and Doden's campaign says those two programs would cost the state around $250 million a year when accounting for public school teachers.
Whitney Downard, is this the sort of thing you get to do when you've already technically been in the race for 18 months?
It's the sort of thing you have to do. He doesn't have the name recognition of Crouch or Braun, who are both won statewide elections. He is the former chamber or IEDC leader, but he doesn't have the name recognition. So he has to put his name out there by putting these sort of policy ideas out there to show that he's a serious candidate and not just a fluke.
He's got some money behind him, which is how he's able to do digital ads to get this message out there. Is this exactly the sort of strategy he should be pursuing?
Oh, I think so, because it does... Raising money is all important, and that's great. He needs to keep doing that. But you also have to show that there's something distinguishing you as a candidate. And if he is seen as the serious, substantive candidate who comes out at this early stage with detailed proposals rather than just platitudes, I mean, this is very detailed, and it's provocative, and it would have an impact if it were enacted. And it's frankly tougher to do that than to issue a promise of promoting opportunity,
freedom,
and prosperity.
You weigh the two.
Which, again, is going to be more common from candidates at this point. So if you can earn the label, such as it is, that here's the serious, substantive candidate, I don't know if that buys you any votes, but in terms of earned media coverage, he might be included by reporters. Are there any reporters left? But the reporters, they are here. Right?
Just a couple.
To the extent that that's sort of at the margins, you know, making sure he is included in discussions of issues.
It does give him a headline in a week when both Crouch and Braun announced.
If you're advising Eric Doden, who's looking at, you know, Mike Braun, Suzanne Crouch, big names statewide, and maybe the list continues to grow in terms of candidates, is this the route you think is best for him to take in trying to establish himself as in the pack?
Yeah, you got to do both. I mean, you've got to talk about what are you going to do? And he is a big thinker, right? He has big ideas, right? He is a big idea guy. It's economic development. This policy is, I think, really substantive and positive for educators and recruiting people in that profession. So, you know, as a matter of strategy, some people do both, some don't. Some just run the political game on the ground, and sometimes the electorate doesn't care about policy. Sometimes you're not in it. 2016 was the general election in 2016 was not a policy-driven exercise for most voters across the country. So the environment you're in also matters.
Yeah. But it's hard to predict that now.
That's
so
right.
I guess so, trying everything you can try.
And you're not going to stop, just because of the nature of who he is, you're not going to stop him from coming out and developing these ideas and having these plans.
You talked about vision. This is a guy who's putting together big policy proposals.
That's at least something substantive other than opportunity, prosperity, and freedom. I mean, at least you know that he's addressing...
Are you against those three things? I think that's what you're
saying. It's like apple pie.
You're
saying, is anybody lined up to be against
it? I can see the headline now. Ann Delaney comes out against those things.
The issue... The teacher shortage issue is a real issue, and the teacher shortage in special education is a real issue. So to the extent that he's focusing attention on that, I think that speaks well of him and makes him certainly different than Mike Braun's announcement.
Yeah, that's for sure. I want to finish with this question, which is, and I'll say it to both of you, does Eric Doden have a real chance of becoming the Republican nominee?
I think he does. Yeah, I think he'll have a legitimate operation. He'll have enough money behind him. This could be the most expensive primary we've had in Indiana history for governor. I mean, if you get into $8 or $10 million, which is all achievable for all three of them, then they can all be standing there in May of 2024.
All right, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Whitney Downard of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. You can find Indiana Week in Review's podcast and episodes at wfyi.org/iwir or on the PBS video app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.